Well, transparency's been lacking. And part of the problem is that when information isn't available, people make their own assumptions. We did a very large research study on 3,000 North American consumers with at least $50,000 in investable assets. We collected demographic information, you know, age, income, education level, retirement status, assets under management, all of those things, as well as psychographics, how people think. And what we actually found was that transparency increased trust. There was a perception beforehand that there were fees that were hidden. And to the extent that a lot of those commissions were embedded, they weren't on the statement. You could find them in the prospectus. But the average investor had the belief or perception that there were fees that they were paying that they weren't aware of. And oftentimes, they overestimated what those fees were. What we found was that when there was full transparency and those embedded commissions were actually made transparent, it was often less than people's assumption was with respect to the magnitude of those fees.
Welcome back to Insight is Capital. I'm your host, Pierre Daly. There's a new wave about to hit the shores of Canadian wealth management, and it's not optional. CRM3, better known as total cost reporting, is here to change the way advisors talk about wealth. Not their own wealth, their clients' wealth. And when it comes to trust, perception, and the advisor-client relationship, few things cut closer to the bone than a conversation about costs. This isn't a minor policy tweak. It's a full-scale overhaul of the investment cost conversation. Under TCR, total cost reporting, it's not enough to hand over an annual fee report and call it a day. Advisors will be expected to open the hood completely, showing management fees, product costs, transaction charges, and anything else related to the investments they hold. Every line item tied directly to each portfolio. And here's the catch. Clients will see it all in black and white. The numbers, the totals, and by extension, the value you deliver as an advisor. The question isn't just what you'll disclose, it's how you'll explain it. Will your clients walk away more confident in your guidance or start shopping for a better deal? That's where today's conversation comes in. Joining me are three voices who can see the edges of this issue from different vantage points. Arnie Hochman from the Securities and Investment Management Association, SEMA. Dr. David Lewis, a behavioral scientist, here to decode how transparency plays with the human brain and the human wallet. And Steve Brogeroux from National Bank of Canada, bringing the institutional perspective on adapting to TCR in the real world. If you're an advisor trying to protect client trust and want to properly prepare clients to understand the numbers in their statements, we hope to make this episode as helpful to you as you prepare for the biggest disclosure shift Canada's seen in years.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Gentlemen, welcome and thank you so much for joining me.
Great.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start at 30,000 feet. The first client statements that include total cost reporting will come out in January of 2027. That is just a little bit shy of 18 months from now. How did we get here, Arnie?
Sure, I'm happy to do that, Pierre. There's a long history to total cost reporting. CRM2 was introduced completely in 2016 after a phased approach. Shortly after that, there was a fairly significant clamor for additional information, i.e. the information that was missing, which were embedded costs or costs incurred indirectly with respect to investment funds. And so the regulators, both on the securities side and the insurance side, started to work towards a more complete picture of costs. And the result of that is total cost reporting, or some call it CRM3. It was a very long journey. It took the better part of 10 years. There were multiple consultations. There was a joint forum that included industry, representatives from both the securities and the insurance sector, as well as other stakeholders. Over the process of devising the final rules, there were some significant changes that occurred.
So this has been on for years. From an operation perspective with my firm, we've been part of it even before the rules was official and out. So we've been working on this for like more than 2 years by now. We're probably like easily 3 years with regulators and the industry. And what we need to understand also is that, yes, the information was provided at the fund level, which now we want to bring it to a more individual client level. And the problem is that pipeline of exchanging that information that belonged to the manufacturers, which now has to be put onto the dealer side, didn't exist. So we needed a long road to get to where we need to be able to do the reporting of 2026 in January 2027. And that's why we asked the regulator for the 2 years journey, is because we had to put the foundation first. We had to agree on how to work, because one of the major difference between CRM2 and now total cost reporting, which is CRM3, CRM2, it was all the dealer fee. So we controlled it. The problem with like total cost reporting is now we're reporting fees that does not belong into our systems, that are not our costs. And so we have to work with those third parties, those IFM, those investment fund managers, to pass the information. And now we have to work not just with one, but with multiples. Depending on how big your shelf is, you could have hundreds of those firms you have to work with. So all that pipeline, we have to be understanding, because it didn't exist.
We could say no one party has all direct and indirect information that pertains to the client's holdings. Therefore, a new ecosystem had to be created involving dealers, managers, and their respective sub-advisors and other related service providers to complete the collection of data necessary for reporting. The objective of including indirect costs now gives the investor a complete view of total costs. So there was a gap, as I indicated earlier. The gap is now being closed. That should spark, hopefully, some very fruitful discussions between clients and their advisors.
Right. And Steve, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. So really at a high level, what total cost reporting brings is three major elements. The first one is the fund expense in dollar. The second one is the direct investment fund charges in dollar again. And the last one is the fund expense ratio as a percentage. So if you really want to know what it actually boils down, is those three very important information in key data that now has to be consumed and provided back to the client on an annual basis. This is not about being perfect to the cent. This is about making sure that we provide a information that is not misleading to the client and that provides the client a better awareness and understanding of the full costs of the ownership of the investments product. That is essentially what the rule is asking us to do.
Well, transparency's been lacking. And part of the problem is that when information isn't available, people make their own assumptions. We did a very large research study on 3,000 North American consumers with at least $50,000 in investable assets. We collected demographic information, you know, age, income, education level, retirement status, assets under management, all of those things, as well as psychographics, how people think. And what we actually found was that transparency increased trust. There was a perception beforehand that there were fees that were hidden. And to the extent that a lot of those commissions were embedded, they weren't on the statement. You could find them in the prospectus, but the average investor had the belief or perception that there were fees that they were paying that they weren't aware of. And oftentimes they overestimated what those fees were. What we found was that when there was full transparency and those embedded commissions were actually made transparent, it was often less than people's assumption was with respect to the magnitude of those fees. And the result actually was that people in the level of trust in the advisor and the financial institution increased when there was transparency. And that's somewhat counterintuitive. One of the big fears with total cost reporting is that suddenly clients are going to see these new fees and they're going to react negatively to the new fees. But what the research demonstrated was that people were overestimating the amount. And when they found the actual proper amount and were able to compare it, it increased the level of trust, made them less price sensitive, more willing to pay for advice, and they in turn link that advice to the value. If you think of luxury goods, for example, oftentimes price is a proxy for quality.
Right.
And what people found was when the transparency was there, they trusted the advisor more, and that significantly contributed to their willingness to seek and follow the advice. So that transparency, you know, has an outcome that's almost the opposite of what people feared. It has a positive outcome.
I would tend to agree with that wholeheartedly because I recall, you know, if I go back to my advisor days, I had come across U.S. guidelines which detailed something called an ADV, which was a disclosure format that advisors in the U.S. had to use. And in that ADV, you had to basically go through it line by line with the client and disclose to the client, you know, how you get paid, how you work, how they engage, how you engage with clients, everything. And I found that the reaction to that, to corroborate your point, David, is that clients felt relieved because there was no surprises. There was no hidden element. They liked the fact that you know, I was upfront. Not everybody was doing that. I just saw that as something that I could do that I thought would enhance things and sort of liberate the client from those, you know, misgivings or fears or suspicions about how I would get paid. And you're right. The other thing it does is it does tie positively back to value as opposed to misgivings and suspicions, which would actually take away from value.
What's particularly new about total cost reporting is all the disparate disclosure, which occurs in different places, is now consolidated into one document. And it makes it much easier for the client to both find it and hopefully understand it, given it isn't spread among different documents. Secondly, there are no new elements of disclosure. It's not as though there are new costs or charges that weren't previously disclosed, but they were disclosed in different documents. But here, they're all in one place.
You may want to take a sample of that document. And as an advisor, you may want to go through that sample document to disclose what those costs that will be reported on their upcoming statements will be.
I think I would add to that, you know, a lot of firms haven't made changes to their client reporting in a decade. You know, changes to branding, changes to color, yeah, maybe typeface. But the actual content of the statement hasn't been changed. And here's a real opportunity, you know, to use the metaphor, you got the hood up, you might as well do some other work while you're at it. And I think you can look at this as an opportunity driven by the requirement.
Maybe something that the dealers can do for their advisors is start providing a roadmap for implementation where, you know, as a guide so that they know, you know, what's expected, what's coming up, what's going to be in that reporting, what's expected from that reporting. I can even see, you know, when we were talking earlier, Steve, you mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of items that are not expected to provide that reporting simply because they fall outside of regulation. What investments are included and what's not included?
The rule is from securities law, and it is investment funds that are prospectus based. There's requirements that if you have a product that is not part of that, but you are aware of embedded costs, which you should through the KYP of your firm that's doing, you're going to have to disclose to the client that there's embedded fee. You just don't have the information. Now, let's go with the joint notice the regulator did. Two regulators worked together, including the insurance side, to do the CRM3, the total cost reporting, together. Now, in insurance law, the manufacturer is accountable and responsible to send information to the policyholder. So if you have a client that have securities, including investment funds with prospectus, but they also have SEC funds, which are the insurance side, The policyholder of the SEC funds, your client, will receive that reporting from the manufacturers of the SEC funds. And on your side, you're forced to disclose that there is embedded fee, but you don't know the information.
Right.
Here's my questions. The information is out there. You can have it. Why did you not consolidate it? And by not putting it there, you open the possibility for the client to ask more questions and wonder about, are you fully transparent? So this is where you can do the minimum and you're at no fault. You're doing what you have to do. Different regulators, different requirements. But you have a chances here to provide all of the information transparently to the best of your ability. So wherever you can get that information, you are being transparent. That can help you and ensure the client feel that they have a trust and a full transparency instead of finding the information in a different right. disclosure that you didn't provide on your side. So that's where I would say there's a bit of a call out to the advisor force here. Talk to your head office, be informed into this, and provide the right message to your head office so that like you can collaboratively work together in providing the best reporting to the client and ensuring there's a transparency, build of trust, and you enhance your services.
One exclusion from the reporting will be for new funds. So that basically indicates right. that there will be a lack of information for the new funds, or the information is for such a short period of time that its disclosure could be misleading. In terms of the form of reporting, while the inputs are specified, the actual form of the reports is not. Therefore, different firms will have different forms of reports, and it will be very important for advisors to look at their particular firm's form of reporting.
And speaking of that, foreign listed ETFs and funds are a major sticking point because the dealer's on the hook because the foreign listed ETF providers are not required under TCR to provide that information to the dealer. So it's incumbent upon the dealers to get that information and therefore incumbent upon the advisors in the end to provide that disclosure of what those embedded costs are for those foreign listed ETFs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that was part of forming the ecosystem. So there are service providers that are stepping into the breach with a view to providing that data. So
right.
hopefully the vast majority will be forthcoming. However, even where it's provided, the data is slightly different than the total cost reporting data that's required to be provided in Canada generally. So data will be provided. It's not exactly the same as the Canadian data. There'll have to be note disclosure to indicate the difference.
Yeah.
So
considering there's well over $200 billion in foreign listed ETFs, Steve, what are your insights on that?
So you're touching on something very interesting. That's a big amount of work for the dealers to do. And also, you got to go get that information. When on the other side, they're not interested to give it to you unless they're forced, and their regulator is not forcing them. Now, there's some equivalency that are quite easy. The U.S. have one that like even our regulator says you could use this one. And also they provided an example for European product as well. So that gives us a bit of an idea of what we could do. There's also professional judgment that's into the rule. And if to try to get that information, let's say, for example, a New Zealand ETF, and that's the only client that got it for whatever reason, and the cost to do this will be enormous with like the integration and everything. At one point, the regulators also provided us the opportunity to say this is undue burden for like, you know, in terms of cost and right. everything to get that information. So you are allowed to provide a disclosure and put the NA in those cases. But you can't do this with some. We know that like ETF in the US, we're very much connected and there is an equivalency. So there is a duty for the dealers to go and get that information.
The dealers will require controls to ensure that there isn't missing data or the data isn't blatantly incorrect or any number of problems can occur in the data feeds. So that therefore requires additional people involved in compliance and risk to ensure that there are reasonable controls in place. And so that then leads to potential reputation risk for both the individual dealer and the industry collectively. If there are more than a couple of stories in the press about blatantly incorrect or missing information, That then provides a negative halo for the industry as a whole. So it's incumbent on all of us to use our very best efforts to get it right out of the box.
Interesting. Very interesting.
You know, the consistency is very important. Most financial advisors recognize that their clients often have money in multiple places. They'll have money in an employer-sponsored plan.
Right.
They may have money sitting in, you know, their bank, as an example, the bank branch, money with the dealer. And really, to properly serve those clients, it's important that there be a portfolio-wide view of the client's investments. You need to really look at all of the investments, look at all of the risks, look at all of the returns as one big picture. And consolidation of assets is the opportunity here. If you can at least see what all of your clients' investments are and compare them to their risk capacity and risk tolerance, then you can provide much better advice for clients. And financial advisors really are interested in creating better financial outcomes for clients. And to the extent that we have comparability across different providers and different assets, it becomes much easier. So as an example, you're no longer having a client conversation where the client says, well, I'm not sure I want to move all my funds here because my funds over there, there are no fees. And, you know, the reality is in the past, there were fees, but they were embedded and they weren't transparent and the client wasn't aware right. of it. They may have thought there might be fees, but there's been plenty of mystery shopping that shows that, you know, you can go into various different institutions and get the answer that, no, our funds have no fees. And, you know, it's whether it's training or, you know, whether it's, you know, less charitable interpretation of why they would say there are no fees. The perception exists, or the possibility exists, that the client is not able to really compare apples to apples across different investments and different institutions. So again, this is something that seems to be a threat to advisors, but is really a tremendous opportunity because it creates that level playing field and it lets an advisor have the conversation. Let's look at all of your assets and let's look at your financial objectives and let's look at what we need to do now going forward to increase the probability that you're going to achieve your financial objective.
Right.
This not only extends to public ETFs in the US, it goes as far as public UCITS in Europe. So if a client were, right. say, on sabbatical in Europe, they bought a UCIT, moved back to Canada, transferred it into their account, you would have appropriate reporting on it as well. So all of this is to the benefit of the client to have a level playing field.
I can see where it also opens up a further discussion that is starting to dominate conversations on portfolio construction, which is fee budgeting, right? And where you know, an advisor has an opportunity to point out to their client, look, you know, you've got all these beta assets, these indexed assets that are costing you very little to own. And I'd like to talk to you about introducing some alternative assets, some private assets, some, absolute return assets that have a higher fee budget than, you know, relative to the beta type assets. And, you know, in terms of building a portfolio, you know, this disclosure is an opportunity to talk about that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Pierre. We actually included that in our research. We looked at people's willingness to pay for advice,
right?
Which is an important question. How much are you willing to pay for financial advice? And the answer isn't zero. The answer is, well, that depends on what the value of that advice is. So as an advisor, if you can demonstrate the value of your advice, you know, the highest contributor to portfolio returns is asset allocation. Over 93% of the variance in
right.
portfolio returns is due to asset allocation. If you can have that discussion on an apples-to-apples basis where you're comparing, you know, return after fees and looking at risk adjusted return so that you're actually doing a proper calculation, people are willing to pay for that advice. And again, that's not a belief, that's founded in the empirical research.
I can see where it would also not only lead to the discussion about fee budgeting and portfolio construction. It definitely opens wide that door, but it also leads to the opportunity, you know, where advisors start to look at streamlining their portfolios as well.
And different fee models, right? Look at
exactly
flat fees versus, right? You can F-class investments, for example, or index ETFs that are very low, but clients do need help allocating among those asset classes. And the correct allocation has a tremendous impact on distal outcomes. One of the largest contributors, in fact, the largest contributor, is behavioral coaching. And that's, I think, where financial advisors can add the most value for their clients. You know, we know that people make emotional decisions. When the markets are going up, people say buy, buy, buy. When they're going down, they say sell, sell, sell. Countless studies have demonstrated that timing the market is impossible. Financial advisors need to have conversation with their clients about what are your long-term goals, what level of risk is necessary to achieve the return that's going to allow you to achieve that goal, given your current level of saving and your current level of spending and your desired outcome. Those are the types of conversations that you want to have, and use newfounded trust that clients have by truly understanding the fees that they're paying to different institutions and different managers for their advice, and create a conversation around the future, around goals and behavior change. And that has the largest contribution in terms of the value of advice. We often underestimate our own expert knowledge and experience. Things that seem simple to us are completely mystifying for most investors. You know, we use terminology. We're familiar with, you know, investing concepts, and that's the expertise that we can offer to clients to help them make better decisions. So you have to recognize that, you know, when we would look at a client statement and it's obvious what it is and what it means, most clients, you know, the vast majority of clients really don't understand it and don't want to. And that's what they want their advisor to do for them. And just overloading people with information and choices doesn't allow them to make better decisions. What it does is it causes them anxiety, which then is a cue that they should seek more information before making a decision. They don't have time to do it now, so they put it down on the table. It goes under a pile of other things. They procrastinate. It creates the exact opposite outcome. You need to tell them now what they're going to hear and what they're going to see. You need to tell them now how you're going to use that information to help them achieve their goals and objectives more reliably, to help them actually be more satisfied with their investment decision-making. And if you lay the groundwork now, it's going to be a conversation clients going to look forward to in January 2027, looking at their first full year retrospective, as opposed to then calling up in, you know, January 2027 saying, what did I just get? What is this? What does this all mean? That's absolutely not going to deepen the relationship. So the conversation should start now, like well in advance.
So by necessity, despite everyone's best efforts, the reporting is extremely complex.
You definitely don't want to end up with you know, clients who become disillusioned because of misperceived optics. I mean, if they misunderstand what they're looking at, then that creates, you know, a post-view problem, which is that you're backpedaling, right? I mean, you don't want to be caught on the back foot with this reporting. You need to get ahead of it. You absolutely have to get way as far out in front of it as you can, so that when the time comes, you're right. You're having an enjoyable conversation. You know, I thank you for explaining this to me ahead of time, because I got the January 27 statement and, you know, I understand it, because that's the goal. The goal is that when you get to January 27 and that first statement goes out, you're not getting a flood of phone calls saying, what is this? What's going on here? You're getting, you know, David, thank you so much for explaining that to me. I'm, you know, you really put my mind at rest. You know, when I got the statement, I saw it, but you know what? I understood it. That's the goal.
Pierre, further to Steve's comment about having two different accounts and perceived differences, It's further complicated if one of the accounts is in the OEO channel and the other is in the advice channel. In the OEO channel, because of the OEO trail ban, it's quite reasonable to expect that there would be a management fee rebate or a dealer rebate. Those amounts could show up either in as a reduction to direct costs or a reduction to indirect costs. And that's just another further complication, because when the client looks at the FER percentage for those funds, those FER percentage numbers are calculated at the fund level and not the individual client level. So the client will not see the FER or dealer rebate in those numbers, which could raise further questions. So again, this is another reason to fully understand the client situation and be able to articulate some of the differences that could rise to the fore.
Gentlemen, what role should industry associations like SEMA be playing over the next 6 to 12 months to ensure that TCR isn't just compliant, but it's also credible, consistent, and ultimately beneficial for investors?
It's very important that SEMA continue the work it's been doing. We have 200 people plus engaged in our TCR task force, and we have a number of subgroups. In terms of very specific work, one of our subcommittees is a communications committee, and it's been hard at work on a couple of documents. So the first two documents we produced are an FAQ, which we intend to be a rolling, ongoing document. So as new issues arise, we hope to capture them and reflect them in the FAQ. That document has been tested with firms. We beta tested, and we're anticipating rolling that out fairly quickly. It's not designed to be provided specifically to advisors. It's more for the firm at a firm level, because their individual facts are going to vary so much that they're going to need to tailor the FAQ, but it's definitely a very, very solid starting point. In addition, we provided a series of 5 examples and then a summary comparative chart, taking into account a lot of different variables, such as fee-based account versus commission-based, what channel you buy in, the amount of the MER or FER.
The idea has always been from the beginning, the industry's got to get together. We got to make sure that like we are touching everybody, we are supporting everybody, so that like nobody is being caught flat-footed. But even more important, there's a consistency in terms of the information he's getting from like the securities perspective. So that is another reason why the association has been very prevalent and been working together. And I'm very pleased to see all the collaboration that has happened in Canada.
Arnie, David, Steve, thank you so much for your incredibly valuable time and your insight.
Thank you very much for having us as well.
Thank you so much, Pierre. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Pierre. It's been great.